This is the Drive and Dish Podcast. Talking about NBA news, stats, and fantasy. To start it off, it's Tim Tompkins.
And like PJ Tucker's a player that you can put on Kyrie Irving. You can also put him on Kevin Love, and you can also put him on LeBron James. Like, that kind of player defensively is incredibly valuable.
Kevin Rayfuse.
Be good, but I don't want to be stuck in the limbo of mediocrity. I don't want to gamble that maybe one day there's a Harden trade. I don't want to gamble that some team is going to be stupid and let a Steve Nash walk out the door and go to Phoenix the way Dallas did, where you stumble upon a superstar.
And Justin Kuzak.
A lot of the times, from my understanding, is close games are won by the coach calling those inbound plays and drawing up a quick sideline play for him.
Well, if you like that, you're going to love this.
Well, if anything, this is the point where we all sit there and get real excited.
Let's do this!
Let's go.
So last week on our intro, we had the discussion of if you order food, let's say from a restaurant, 5 minutes before it closes, or let's even say 15, let's say 15 minutes before it closes, and this all came from a group of nurses at a hospital ordering pizza 5 minutes before it closes, and we had the discussion, are you a bad person?
Etiquette.
And I think the consensus was not really, but like kind of.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're a terrible person. I'm not wavering in my opinion.
Well, I think it depends who it is. You really still think that group of nurses are terrible people?
I mean, I don't know. Just because you are nurses doesn't mean that you can do whatever you want. That being said, if they had been working a shift where that was the only time they could order food, by all means. But if they just happened to have like had some free time and just waited until right before they ordered it, like, I don't know. I haven't talked to them.
I don't think nurses have a lot of free time. Like, I can't imagine that being a profession where there's a lot of downtime.
I mean, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. Either way, I wasn't there. I don't know them. So I don't want to talk about that specific case. But one of our listeners went to our website, driveanddishpodcast.com, where you can send us a longer form message than you can on Twitter.
Yes.
And his name is Michael, so I wanted to read his response.
Oh, thanks, Mike.
Yeah, thanks, Michael. A really nice guy. I actually chatted up with him via email for a little bit. Michael said, think I should start by saying that I love your podcast, by far the most entertaining podcast out there. Not true. Always looking forward to
He's entitled to his opinion.
Always looking forward to new episode from you guys, and also Zach Lowe, my favorite, Driving Dish in the Low Post.
Zach Lowe is the best.
Compliments out of the way. And after having listened to your theories about people coming to hospitals or restaurants or stores at the last seconds before close, well, my only opinion is that you all sound like some of the laziest people I've ever heard of. I owned my own business for quite some time, and I kept the doors open until the last person left because that's what my business was, to make money. It's very simple. If you don't want to be working late, get a new job where you can sit on the couch and smoke pot all day. Coming from somebody with a work ethic, I find that it is beyond pathetic to hear about people complaining about having to work a little later. Boo-hoo, change jobs, work at a library. You want to work in the service industry? Get ready for late nights. Been there before. Don't complain because you are getting paid to do a job. That is so rude and lazy to complain to a customer that they should have come in sooner. If you don't like your closing time, change your closing time. Quite simple. If you open your doors, then you're open. There are businesses meant to make money, and if employees can't handle it, they should probably apply for employment elsewhere where laziness is acceptable. Man, do I love listening to you guys. You guys make me laugh my ass off all the time, but that opening conversation really pissed me off. Can't stand lazy whiners with no work ethic. Oh no, boo-hoo, I have to work an extra half hour doing my job that I get paid for. Sure, I understand I don't have to go into a restaurant or a store at the last second unless I'm just going to buzz in and buzz out, but if you're running a business, you have absolutely no right whatsoever to complain if a customer enters the business during open hours. Complaining about a customer entering your store during open hours is absolutely nonsense. Change your hours or change your job. Take responsibility for your life and don't blame some poor schmuck who wanted a pizza. Maybe the poor dude worked from 3 to 11 o'clock at night and needed some food. I love you guys, your information and hysterical to you're informative and hysterical to listen to, but man, I couldn't disagree more than your philosophy of being lazy. Do your job or quit. I hated having to deal with employees like that. Don't work in a restaurant working environment where you can go home at the same time every day rather than complaining about customers who want to eat food. They are paying you for your service, not the other way around. There is definitely something that you guys don't seem to understand. Many options of jobs that don't require you to stay hours late. My best friends are salaried and they work far more than 40 hours a week because they have work to do it, and that's just the way life is. Toughen up, boys. Working late isn't exactly difficult.
Ooh, dude, he just came at your head.
Ooh.
Because that's you. That was.
I would like to point out that was not our position.
I don't care. I have work.
Also, thank you for the kind words, though. We appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and we all are salaried, so I do understand. I minimum work 45
hourly, by the way.
Are you hourly?
Yes.
Oh, you're lucky. Yeah. No, I minimum work. I'm salaried. I mean, the lowest amount of hours I've worked in a week is 45.
Yeah. I told the guy.
And that's on a good week.
I told the guy I don't mind that he disagreed. I was just happy that he cared enough to have an opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's great.
I completely agree.
Absolutely.
That being said, the person owning the business and the person sitting there for an hour and a half, 2 hours, making $6-7 an hour are under completely different circumstances than the person that owns a business. Also, as far as you are there until you're there to serve food as long as your business is open, mm-hmm. absolutely right. Part of our conversation was if you bring your family of five into a restaurant 10 minutes before they close and you sit there for an hour and a half, 2 hours, that is well beyond when closing time was.
Right, but that said person will then be able to clock those 2 hours.
Well, and it's also part of the food service game, is what I think his point is you kind of know, like, I know as a newscaster that if something crazy breaks, like, let's say, God forbid, there's another Paris attack, I'm working late. It's just like one of the, do I love it? No, of course not. I don't love it. I want to go home as much as anybody else, but am I going to work it? Well, yeah, it's my job. Like, that's why I'm here.
So it's about the etiquette of walking into a restaurant, ordering a pizza right before they close, whatever it happens to be. And I still stand firm in the position that if you walk into a restaurant 10 minutes before they close, sit down and eat, you're a douche. That's not going to change just because someone disagreed with me
by email.
That's
fair. No, that's fair.
It's fine. You should stick to
your
opinion.
You're allowed to stick to your opinion.
Yeah, I love how you guys totally backing off.
I said I was a little of both. I said, like, I don't think employees should complain about it, but I know me personally, I can't see myself walking into a restaurant 10 minutes before they close. Because I understand, like, people have things to do. Like, they may not necessarily want to stay there late. Maybe they've had a long day. I always was kind of, go back and listen to the tape. I always said I saw both sides.
I'm more for the, if you're open, you're open. And I said that was my whole thing, is like, you're open until that minute that you're closed.
Right, the minute that you're closed. That was my point. So someone stays past, but
those people got there before you were closed, so they are grandfathered in.
Right, but
any new person is not allowed in.
If you're open till 10 and someone decides to stay there until 11:30 eating, they're being a douche.
But when did they get there?
If you work at 9, what if you get there, let's say 9:15, which I think is a reasonable time to eat dinner, especially depending what it is, but you end up staying there a little past 10. Are they wrong?
No, that's fine.
But what's the difference? They're still staying late.
Right, they're staying late. They showed up with an adequate amount of time to eat, and what you said was them staying a little bit after. Staying till 10:30 is fine. It's the people that walk into a restaurant 10 minutes before they close and sit there for an hour and a half when they're the only table in the restaurant. Those people are douches.
Well, my theory is they got there before it closed.
I'm not saying it's not right.
I know.
But it's unethical, and they're douchebags.
Really said douchebag a lot in this intro.
Yeah. Yeah, I worked in the service industry for a long time. I understand where Michael's coming from. I also think that people that work in the service industry get crapped on a lot, that they have really hard jobs, that they don't make a lot of money, and they have to deal with really crappy people.
Sometimes they can be good.
Maybe not owners, but a lot of crappy managers. Worst managers I've ever had in my life have always come from the service industry.
Well, worst managers I've ever had, actually, this is going to say, I worked at a grocery store. My manager was addicted to heroin, so no one will ever be worse than that guy.
Okay.
So,
was he a nice guy, though, or was he bad because he was a heroin addict, or was he bad because he was just an awful person?
You could tell when he was not on the heroin because he was very angry. You would find the empty beer bottles in the back that he was drinking during his shift, and then I would have to do his work on top of
my
work.
How was this dude not fired?
His dad owned the business.
Oh, of course he did.
Must be nice.
Yeah, well, we saw how that worked for Brian Colangelo. So.
Oh, here we go again.
Anyways, you're listening to the Drive-In Dish NBA podcast. My name is Kevin Rayfuse. Joining me to my left, my co-host, Tim Tompkins.
Ball don't lie.
And behind the boards, keeping us honest as always, our producer, Justin Kuzart.
We got this. # Detroit basketball.
Andre Drummond.
No.
Reggie Jackson.
This is kind of a trick one.
You know who this is? This is the Detroit Pistons themselves.
Yes.
Yes.
Did you see this video? There's a video attached to it.
It's really weird, too, because, like, Reggie Jackson misses the shot, and they're like, don't worry, we got
this. It's not Reggie Jackson. That's the fan on the side of the court shoots it and misses, and Reggie Jackson looks at him like, dude, you're delaying the game, and then it pans out and says, Leave the scoring.
Right. Okay, I get the video now. Thanks for explaining that. I saw that and I was like, that's a weird video. He just missed a shot. And they're like,
and Reggie Jackson really mean mugs the dude too. It was intimidating.
Hey, I'd be pissed too if some idiot shot from courtside. You're a fan. Stay out of the game. Yeah. Don't delay. You're like, there's a contract that you basically make when you are a fan and you're a ticket holder, and that you're not going to do dumb things like shoot a basketball and totally miss and hold up the game.
Well, it's like, especially if you got a momentum going.
I kind of want to.
Yeah.
I would love to.
Yeah. And you both should be ejected in that case.
I'm sure the fan probably
good.
Was
he should be ejected. He deserves it.
Yeah.
Because he was doing something that was rude to the players, delaying their game.
Oh, here we go. Here we go. Don't you try to turn this around.
Completely different scenarios.
Each week, we like to give you guys a shout out for giving us a shout out on iTunes. It really does mean the world. So if you haven't had a chance yet, please do leave us a review on iTunes. And this week, we have one from...
Got one from America This Week. It is titled NBA Analysis and Personality. It's a 5-star review by Uncle Tanner. Uncle Tanner says, the chemistry behind these guys is pretty awesome. It's a professional show, but everyone speaks their mind and the listener is satisfied. If you're a fan of the NBA, you'll be a fan of the show. Subscribe now.
Oh.
That being said, we're recording this quote-unquote professional show in a homemade fort in Kevin's living room.
It's got professional equipment.
Yeah, yeah, maybe. The air mattress probably isn't professional.
Well, setup isn't professional per se, but the equipment is absolutely professional.
I'm not sure it's industry standard. I'm pretty sure we had to go like a step below industry standard.
Which is fine.
Tell me something I do not know. Do not know.
Now. If you do not know the present, how can you claim to know the future?
Now on NBA News on the Drive and Dish podcast.
We need to know now.
All right, first in your news, the Washington Wizards are expected to fire Randy Whitman this offseason. The Wizards reached the second round of the playoffs last year, but they missed the playoffs altogether this one. John Hammond apparently could be fired or will step down as general manager of the Bucks. Hammond received a 1-year extension from the Bucks a year ago. He is expected to take up a similar position with the New Orleans Pelicans to reunite with Joe DeMars. The future of Jason Kidd is also in doubt. Apparently, the ownership is not too happy with him beyond Mark Lassery. The Bucks somewhat surprisingly reached the playoffs in 2015, but they obviously took a step back this year. It's been the general feeling around some of the New York Knicks players that Kurt Rambis is apparently kind of talking down to them. Phil Jackson has pushed to hire Rambis as their head coach on an ongoing basis. Rambis has a career record of 32 and 132 as head coach with the Timberwolves and the Knicks. Some of the other coaches that are available are Thibodeau, Mark Jackson, Scott Brooks, and David Blatt. After just 61 games over 3 seasons combined, this season, Derrick Rose has played 66 games. He has averaged 16 points, 4 assists on a 42% shooting average. He has said, I love the way I played this season. He says he believes the Chicago Bulls still have enough talent to win a championship despite missing the playoffs this season. Kobe Bryant has commented on his retirement tour. He says, it feels good to get through it healthy. He said the farewells would have been a little bit different if the Lakers were still a contender this year, though. That's your news for this week.
Something.
So you guys are going to love this story. I woke up this morning and I get into work, and one of my first and favorite things to do every morning is go to NBA Reddit and see what crazy things I missed while I was asleep. The NBA Reddit goes hard sometimes. There was this one trending story that had over almost 2,000 comments of this guy who titled it, StubHub has ruined my chance to watch the last game at the Sleep Train Arena. And I was like, okay, good enough clickbait. I will proceed. Me also thinking in the back, should have went with SeatGeek, personally. This guy went through this whole story about how he bought tickets on StubHub that he found were about $356, which there was a part where he
What do you mean by about? Because that sounds pretty precise.
Well, he says about, which again, looking back, it was StubHub. I'm sure they added in some weird cost because it was the day of or something like that. Well, compared to SeatGeek, that would not happen. That would be the price. It was $356. $356 when you check out. He got to the arena to go in, and it didn't work. And so he thought something was wrong. He tried again on his phone, and it didn't work again. So they sent him over to the concession stand to see what was wrong. Found out he had gotten not real tickets.
Poor guy.
And he said, so he's calling StubHub, trying to figure it out. And StubHub's whole thing is they'll reimburse. No. This doesn't help me right now.
It doesn't. No.
And so looking back at it, if you had just gotten the SeatGeek app, he could have picked the exact spot of where the seats were and found out, okay, this is where I'm getting this. This is where I'm going to be sitting. These tickets are real. He would have known it was a good deal because $356 for a OKC Kings game in the last, you know, game of the arena, like you can see the last game, it's going to be a little more pricey. What you could have done is go to SeatGeek. You could have downloaded the SeatGeek app, and if you were listening to this podcast, the said person could have put in DISH as the promo code in the settings tab, and it would have saved him $20 off of it, and he would have known they were real tickets, and the price never would have went up.
Absolutely, and Kobe's last game is coming up on Wednesday.
Yes,
and you can get tickets for that on SeatGeek. I checked, they aren't cheap, but you do get $20 off if you put in promo code DISH when you buy, so whatever. $20 cheaper.
And then you won't have to go through this problem.
Right. They'll be real tickets. That's and they won't be about $356. They'll be that specific cost.
Yeah.
And you'll know if you're getting good value.
Yep. It is official for the first time since 08. So you're looking at 7 years. The Bulls are officially out of the playoffs.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Are there going to be firings? Are there going to be, like, do you see anything in the foreseeable?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
I was talking to somebody about this earlier today, and they were really bummed about it. They're a Bulls fan. And I was like, well, now, if you look at it in the way that you've had this mediocre roster for this many years that hasn't been working out, you now have all the right to go and just
blow it up.
Blow up this roster, because whatever you have isn't working.
I was going to say, do you think that? Because I saw them saying they want to keep Joakim Noah now.
Oh, yeah, over Pau Gasol. Pau Gasol said he didn't like Fred Hoiberg. I think the reason for it was the immaturity issue, because during practice one game, Fred Hoiberg played a clip from Dumb and Dumber. So I guess that...
He played it before the game when they had the Cavs to say that they still had a chance. He didn't like that? I thought that was kind of creative.
He did not like that.
Because being serious worked so well all season.
Right. Well, I mean, Jimmy
and
Butler...
And they won that game.
Yeah, Jimmy Butler kind of gave him a hard time about Fred Hoiberg early this season for not making him practice hard enough.
Yeah.
So maybe this was an overall trend. I mean, if you look at the Bulls, we came into the season and remember, it's supposed to be this motion offense. It's supposed to run so much faster. The Bulls were 20.
The minutes were supposed to be
the minutes
better.
Were going to go down. The Bulls were 21st in scoring at 101.2 points per game. They were 26th in offensive rating. They were 12th in pace. And Hoiberg had to repeatedly meet with Derrick Rose to emphasize getting the ball across half court with just 3 seconds off the clock. The offense was the issue. Mm-hmm. Their defense wasn't.
Well, right, I feel the defense was always pretty good.
Well, they brought Hoiberg in so that they'd be better on offense.
Right. Yeah.
That was the sole purpose of the hiring and letting Tibbs go, is that we know Tibbs is an excellent defensive coach. The Bulls are one of the best defensive teams in the league every single year under Tibbs. Mm-hmm. Hoiberg was supposed to be able to kind of open up the offense a little bit using a healthier Rose, using Butler, using guys like Mirotić, and it didn't happen.
If you're the Bulls, are there, like, do you keep Butler? Like, is that, like, do you have to pick a player?
A lot of Bulls players are saying that Rose and Butler can't play together.
Well, and it just seems like the whole time, like, we kind of talked about in the offseason, it seemed like there were drama, they weren't on the same page, and, like, nobody ever confirmed it. But, I mean, honestly, if I'm a Bulls fan, there's no scenario in which I can justify myself that I'm keeping Derrick Rose over Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler is not an injury liability. He's carried the team at times this year. Like, Derrick Rose... I'm sorry, like, it just didn't work. It's unfortunate how it played out. Derrick Rose was an MVP of the league at one point. He looked like the sky was the limit, but you got to kind of cut your losses and move on. And if I'm picking one player on the Bulls between Rose and Butler, it's a no-brainer that I'm taking Jimmy Butler every time.
I guess because the cap going up, will people, you know, want to take on Derrick Rose's contract?
Oh, sure they will. I think there's somebody out there. You can't tell me there's not
the
a team
Nets.
That
the
wants
Nets
to
will
want
to sell tickets. Like, some of this stuff is about selling tickets more than wins and losses.
Because they do need a point guard.
Yeah,
I mean,
and the Jazz do have the money, is the thing about it. Just look at how great Shelvin Mack has been, and that's, you know, basically the same thing as adding, who do you guys have on that?
Ish Smith.
You know, release
the Ish, dude.
Come on. No, I know. I was just having
that
a brain
fart. That luster wore off a little bit, side note.
Yeah, but I mean, this is like, look at the impact that adding a third string guard has done to the... Mm-hmm. To the Jazz. I mean, they also have Dante Cunningham coming back next season, so we'll see what happens with that. But yeah, this Bulls team, it's out of the playoffs, it's a big deal. I can't wait until we get all the comments from all the different players when the season's over. Just all the crap talking.
Well, it's just bad. I mean, there are reports from that locker room where just multiple players have said there's no real leadership, and there have been reports that Jimmy Butler's tried to take control of the team and kind of be that guy, but nobody's taking him seriously. I mean, when Pau Gasol is one of the nicest guys in the league. He's a guy that's been around for a long time. He's pretty well respected by everybody. And when Pau Gasol is saying that there's issues in the locker room, man, there's got to be issues in the locker room.
If you were completely blowing it up, if you had to pick like two or three players from the Bulls, like who would you try to keep on? Like would you like? Okay, so we keep Butler.
Of course.
You know,
they should. I don't think they're. I don't know necessarily that they're going to.
Portis, you keep Portis.
You keep McDermott. Been playing.
Yeah, you keep McDermott. You keep your younger players. I mean,
you like Gibson go?
Yeah. Well, maybe not. I mean, and Joakim Noah's coming off the books this year, too. And you were just talking about that, like, they want to re-sign him. But mm-hmm. I think he's getting, like, $15 million a year right now.
You can get him for less.
And that's, we were talking about the Bulls' core when you have Derrick Rose making 20, Butler making 15, Joakim Noah making 15. I mean, that is a three players making a whole lot of money that just, frankly, aren't really producing.
For the most part, mm-hmm. they were injured. They went through a good slew of injuries this year, for sure.
They should get Jimmer Fredette.
Oh, okay, good. Yep, there right. You go.
Release the Jimmer. So that'll be fun to follow over the summer.
What I was going to say, another team that might, in the rumors of blowing it up, is the Rockets. Like, do you think the Rockets, if they don't make the playoffs, which is a weird situation right now, but there's a good chance they don't, and there's an okay chance they do, but if the Rockets don't make the playoffs, do you think they blow it up?
Well, blow it up in what sense, I guess, is the question. I mean, the Rockets are in a better situation. Like, the Rockets clearly have that guy they're going to build around. Like, you have to build around Harden. There's no question about that.
Okay.
The question is, how much of the supporting cast do you blow up?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
It's pretty clear as day that the Rockets don't want Dwight Howard there.
What, do you get rid of Howard? Do you get rid of Morey? Do you get rid of Bickerstaff? Like, do you just...
Yeah, from the reports I was reading, the Rockets are planning a quote-unquote comprehensive evaluation of all facets of the organization at the end of this highly disappointing season that will put general manager Daryl Morey and interim coach JB Bickerstaff under the microscope.
Here's my other question. They do make the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see us still think they potentially blow it? Like, does making the playoff change anything here?
No, because I feel, unless they happen to make it a really late postseason run again, this season has been a massive disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
And a little bit of process language on our next episode on mm-hmm. later on this week, we're going to talk about the most disappointing teams in the league mm-hmm. with a 1-5 list, and I'm really excited.
I feel like we just kind of gave away two of them.
Well, we just gave away one of them.
One of them?
Okay, two. All right.
Well, we say, come on.
We got two. Well, there's three more, so you're going to have to stay tuned for that. But yeah, I mean, you know, look at Ty Lawson. That didn't work, though. I still think that was the right move. They got Ty Lawson for basically nothing.
Oh, that was absolutely the right move. I don't think anyone should write
you have to try.
It just didn't work. Like, they got, like you said, they got Lawson for basically nothing, and you have to take the flyer on how well he played in the past.
Mm-hmm.
You have to gamble sometimes to take the leap.
Really interesting look at the Rockets coming up, though, is they're in this battle for the 8th seed with the Jazz, and it took Kevin and I like 15 minutes to figure out who had the tiebreaker on this.
Well, because
there's just like, you have to go to the fourth level of tiebreaker, and it really is, I mean, let's just go over the tiebreaker scenario, shall we? Yeah. So obviously, if it's between 2A teams, the number one is the head-to-head win-loss percentage. The Rockets and the Jazz are tied. The division leader...
Well, if they are tied. They aren't tied right now.
So the division leader wins the tie from a team not leading a division. Obviously, the Rockets and the Jazz aren't leading their division, so that's irrelevant. The division win-loss percentage for teams in the same division as of right now is also the same for both of these teams. So finally, in the conference win-loss percentage, Houston owns the tiebreaker.
With 26-24 compared to the Jazz's 24-26.
Nice.
Right.
Nice. So I'm glad you guys did that, not me, because I was just going
to
be like,
eh. Well, we were waiting for you to get here. You had a little bit of extra time for work. Okay. And I were chilling.
Matt Moore of CBS Sports put up this really, really comprehensive tiebreaker list.
Oh, no.
And I went and read it, and I just, like, I asked him, how long did that take you to put together?
And did he respond at all?
No, he didn't respond.
Well, it just gets ridiculous.
I'm a peon on Twitter.
Well, I know.
Well, it just gets ridiculous, okay. too. I mean, you start going down this list. It's like win-loss percentage versus playoff teams, own conference. Win-loss percentage versus playoff teams, other conference. And the net points, all games. It's just like...
Well, and then on top of it...
Could you imagine if they were tied... How salty on a 1-10 would you be if you were tied through 6 levels of tiebreakers and you missed the playoffs on how many points you scored?
The cumulative total.
Well, I was going to say, and then the whole other side thing.
Salty.
the whole side thing is the Mavs still haven't technically clinched, correct?
No, so like, no, the Mavs have, but they will. The Mavs are in.
You assume, yeah. But it's one of those things where it's like, okay, so they might still have a weird situation.
Well, the Mavs are up 2-1 Houston with 2 to go.
They'd have to lose out. Houston would have to win out, and then we were looking at a tiebreaker situation. And we didn't figure that out.
Right.
We'd have to go into that, which might, who freaking knows?
Right. You look at the Rockets games coming up. They have the Wolves and the Kings. The Wolves were actually last night. The Jazz have the Mavericks and the Lakers. Again, the Mavericks being last night. We're recording this on a Monday, though. If the Jazz went out, they make the playoffs. So at least the Jazz are in control of their own destiny at this point. Mm-hmm. This Mavericks game kind of worries me. If you're the Rockets, this Wolves game worries me. They both have a really tough one.
Yeah, I mean, it's... Every game is tough. Every team wants to play spoiler at this point of the year. I think the Wolves, I mean, we just saw the Wolves beat the Warriors. They're playing good ball lately. Obviously, you never know when Karl Anthony Towns is just going to fully morph into an alien and dominate. Obviously, the Mavericks, they're, you know, jockeying for playoff position. It matters for them. They're still trying. Everybody's trying to lock up that sixth seed.
Well,
J.J.
Barea is
seed.
Down for the rest of the season. Or yeah. until the playoffs. So, I mean, that's good news for the Jazz.
Yeah, I was actually, you brought up Towns, but that made me think of Wiggins, and I was trying to figure out who had a better season this year between Wiggins and Jabari Parker, and it's, like, weirdly close. Like, they both pretty much did
Wiggins'
the same.
Counting stats, like, all went down.
And then Parker's was, like, you had to take it for what it was, because he only played, like, what?
This is basically his rookie season.
Yeah, so it was, like, they played that, and, like, I was looking at their win shares, and mm-hmm. I think Wiggins was at, like, 0.52 and Jabari Parker was at like 0.46. It's like they're all very close, and it wasn't much of a difference, which was kind of a surprise to me.
Yeah, the James Harden asked Kobe Bryant, and we'll move on to Kobe here in a minute. But James Harden asked Kobe Bryant, excuse me. He said to Kobe that they need some help beating Utah. So if the Lakers could please beat Kobe, or please beat the Jazz in their final game.
Well, and I was actually reading a lot of the like Kobe articles talking about how these are his last few games, and he even said, which I don't think the Jazz would, because the Jazz do need to win. But he was saying like he hopes the Jazz come out and play it like a normal game and play them hard, and you know, if they go, I think he said they lost by 40 to him the last time. He's like, right. If we lose by 40, we lose by 40, you know. And they're like, what would have been the great ending to Kobe? And Kobe's like, well, getting another freaking ring, but that's not going to happen.
Right,
so,
right.
So, you know, he'll just show up and he'll play his game and do his best. And I think it was Russell was saying, he's like, look, in these past, it's get Kobe the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And I've read articles talking about how they were saying like, if anybody other than Kobe shoots during the game, the fans boo them.
Well,
like anybody other than Kobe shooting, they boo him.
Should Kobe go for the all-time record of most field goal attempts?
I mean, he might as well. Right. Okay, this kind of brings... We've already had this discussion on Twitter, okay? And me and Kevin were talking about it on the side, and we wanted to bring it up on the podcast because Steph Curry has himself in a weird situation. And we won't get too off topic for a second, but Curry could hit, I think he's 9 threes away from hitting the 400 mark in a season. He also can be in the 50, 40, 90 club. And so we presented the question, but the problem is, I think his field goal percentage is at 50.1%.
Oh,
and
right.
He said to get to 400, he's just going to start chucking. So the idea is, by doing that, he would probably go under 50% field goal percentage. So the question is, would you rather make it into the 50, 40, 90 club or set the record yourself at 400?
Oh, set the record.
Yeah, no, I'm going full 50, 40, 90.
Yeah, Tim was for 50, 40, 90. Mm-hmm. I was for 400, and you were for 400.
I'm for 400. I mean, that's your record. You're on top of the world. There's a lot of people in 50, 40, 90, and 50, 40, 90 is great. Like, it's extremely impressive. Like, it means you had an awesome season. It's a truly impressive feat. But no one remembers who's in the 50, 40, 90 club, and everybody absolutely remembers who made the first three-pointers in the season. I just, like...
To be fair,
I think, like, that's a cool thing to be in, and it's nice, but, like...
Curry already has the 1 through 3 spot in most threes in one
right,
season.
So you want to build your records and keep them, you know, you don't want your records to be broken, and you're on top.
I don't
of
see
it.
Someone breaking this record
reign.
For a while.
Yeah, that's what we said about the Bulls record too, but that's on the verge of being broken, and we'll get into that game in a second, but you know, no, records can be beat, but I'd rather sit on top of the mountain alone for a while than being when realistically, I mean, this is probably the first time in 2.5 years of doing this show that we've ever brought up the 50, 40, 90 club.
I don't think that's quite completely accurate. My argument on this is not that that's not impressive, but it's just once that record's beat, the record no longer means anything. So if Steph mm-hmm. Curry can walk away from this season having gotten MVP, having beaten the Bulls record, won a championship, and done that while being in the 50-40-90 club, that is so impressive. I'd rather be in that just because once that 400's broken, no one remembers anymore. It's always going to be the guy that got 401 at that point. Yeah. And so the 50-40-90 you always have. Yes, I get that you're on top of a mountain, but I want that 50-40-90.
We were also talking about, I think Clay Thompson has the I guess it would be the fourth most at like 275. And after that, it's Curry, and then Curry. So
you look at all the kids coming out right now. Everyone wants to be Curry. Everybody's just chucking. Yeah. So, give it 10 years, and this everybody's going to be
shooting
threes.
But if they do move the three-point line,
right,
that could make it harder to break, I guess, for a while.
Hey, so I was watching the Lakers-Rockets game the other night when Kobe went off for like 37. And it was really cool. It was really cool to see Kobe. Anyway, the three-point line was lighting up again. I can't stand it. The NBA needs to change
it.
Do you?
No, I don't mind it at all. Because if their foot's on it, you'll see it flash around their foot and you can tell if they're on the line or not.
The problem with me is the minute that three-point line lights up, goes off the ball and it goes onto the three-point line and every single time.
I think that's why I like it, because they shoot it, then I look at it and I'm like, oh, he's on the line.
No, yeah, I'm kind of on Tim's side here. I hate that. It's just so unnecessary. Like, you know where the guys are shooting from. If it's not there, they'll do the video review. Like, you'll see the review 2 seconds later, if it's even the remote, like, it reminds me of back in the day, the NHL, not to switch sports, but the NHL tried this thing where they had a burst of color following the puck around, and it's distracting. You're not actually watching. I don't want to watch. Tim's right. I don't want to watch the line. I want to watch, I want to follow through on the shot. And I don't feel like I'm watching that when the line lights up.
That's where my eye goes every single time, too.
Yeah.
Without fail. The second that three-point line lights up.
Well, and you probably noticed this, because I actually read a thing. That game, they set a record for most threes taken in a game.
I did not. Kevin was reading Trevor Ariza's comments on that game, though.
Oh, Trevor Ariza's comments were great. He said the first time he played against Kobe, because obviously Ariza was a Laker for a while.
This is awesome.
But he said the first time he played against Kobe, Kobe scored 40 on him. And last night, Kobe scored 35 on him. So he said, I guess I got a little bit better. Amazing.
I guess that's one of those things, is maybe he just can't guard Kobe. Like, don't ever have him guard Kobe.
Kobe also... I thought him hugging Hakeem Olajuwon after the game was
a
really
lot
cool
of
moment.
Cool respect there.
It's legends, got to pay homage a little bit. But speaking of legendary streaks, not to switch up a little bit, we haven't mentioned this yet. Obviously, it's the big news right now. The Warriors have hit win number 72 in dramatic fashion by finally someone beat the Spurs at home, ending the Spurs' chance of having that perfect home season. They're one away, and it's just, do they break it, which I feel like they have to at this point.
Yes, they get the W.
And
I feel like they should win the Grizzlies.
Yeah, they're going to beat it. But not to interrupt, Kevin, because you already did. My question is, ESPN has moved Kobe's last game from ESPN1 to ESPN2 to put on the Warriors game.
Fair.
Is it?
Absolutely.
You sit there and you flip back and forth. Unless you can dual screen,
why not put the Warriors on ESPN2?
Because here's my thing. The Warriors, we're looking at potentially the greatest regular season in NBA history. The NBA has been a league for a long time now. It's going on 100. It's, put it this way, it's closer to 100 years than its infancy. This has been the storyline all season. Are the Warriors?
I feel like Kobe's storyline.
Okay, but we've been paying homage, and no disrespect, and in any other situation, I would never ever encourage this. But we've been paying homage to Kobe Bryant all freaking season. This is history in the making. We may never see this again. Nobody thought that Bulls record was ever going to be broken. We're watching it being broken. I don't know when I'm going to see the Warriors or someone potentially break this record again. I've seen Kobe Bryant play for the last 20 years. I'm sorry, Kobe. This is precedence. We may never see this again. It's got to be on the Mania.
We've watched the Warriors
millions of times
break this record all season, if you want to look at it like that, though. Like, yes, this is the one game that puts it over, but each win was them breaking the record. This is the last time we're ever going to see Kobe Bryant play.
Unless he comes back.
Right.
He's not coming back.
That, to me, is more important to watch than whether or not the Warriors...
And I think it would be more of a problem if the Warriors play before, like, a game before Wednesday, like on a Monday or a Tuesday type thing, because then they could potentially beat it beforehand, and then it wouldn't matter that game. But
right. Well, this question is only coming up because they're at the same time.
Right. They're at the same time. So Like, I what I'm going to do is I'm going to have the Warriors-Spurs game on the TV, and then I will have the Lakers game on my laptop.
Well, of course we all are, but you gotta answer the question.
I'm going to have both of them on.
That's not the answer to the question.
That is my answer.
If you were ESPN and you can only play one of these games, which one are you playing?
You kind of have to do the Warriors game.
Exactly.
You're put in a tight spot.
I don't agree.
There are not many scenarios in which I would ever advocate Kobe Bryant's last game being off television. This is probably the only one.
Put it this way. Yeah. If they do beat the record and they only had the Kobe game on, like, Reddit would be going in on ESPN.
To me, Kobe Bryant's 35-point game, short of being at home, was probably the best finale you're ever going to see for Kobe Bryant. All Kobe Bryant, his final game is going to be a bunch of ceremonies, and it's going to be great. Like, I'm looking forward as a basketball fan to watching the league pay homage to Kobe Bryant, and I've enjoyed it all season long. I thought they've done a really good job of giving Kobe his farewell tour. But again, we've seen it all season long. I can watch the ceremony. I want to watch a team potentially become the greatest regular season team of all time. I may never see this again for my life.
It will really
repeating
suck.
The same point.
But it's true.
I'm never going to see Kobe Bryant play again.
Yeah, but they have didn't been know the Warriors were going to break a record. This
all
is the first
season,
time,
all season we've been talking about
it.
It
can be here, though. This is the first time it can happen.
Well, yeah, it can only happen at the end of the season, of course. Yes, that is an absolute true statement.
But it's a one or done for history. It could maybe not happen. This is history in the making.
It's Kobe Bryant's last game.
Kobe his history.
You're
though.
Never going to see Kobe play again.
Yeah,
to me,
but I've seen him play
important.
For 20 years. I've only seen this Warriors team play for 81 games so far.
All right, well, we agree to disagree.
Don't delay hot.
It's time for hot takes from Reddit.
Hot, right?
Hot take number one.
A historic game that means absolutely nothing in a pursuit for a championship. Pop and every other coach in the league who has a shot at a ring is going to prioritize a playoff preparation over some meaningless regular season record.
Yeah, I completely agree. The NBA teams play the game and they play the season to win a championship. The regular season records are great, but we talked about this with the Warriors too. If the Warriors win 73 games and don't win a championship that season, for better or for worse, is going to kind of be looked upon as a failure. They're going to be that team that broke the regular season record and didn't win it all. At the end of the day, the objective is to win it all. The 96 Bulls won it all. I think Pop, the home record is great, but in the long run, Pop and Duncan are trying to cement their legacy by getting a sixth ring and being on the same level as Jordan and Pippen and all those guys. And that, to me, I just it would be different maybe, again, if you're going for that regular season 73 wins, because I think it's just so special and it's so unheard of that it's one of those things. But if you're in the Spurs scenario and when going undefeated at home is cool, having another parade in San Antonio is a lot cooler.
Hot take number two.
So David Locke, we know from the Utah Jazz, he tweeted out the other day, Jazz defense over the last 15 games are number one in defensive efficiency, number one in free throws and field goals attempted, and number one in defensive rebounding, which I guess begs the question, or the hot take I should say, is going into the playoffs, assuming the Jazz make it, are the Jazz the best defensive team in the playoffs?
No, the Spurs are.
Yeah, I still think the Spurs might get that. Maybe even Warriors.
Yeah.
No?
The Jazz are such a defensive team. I mean, when you watch them, they win their games on scoring. The Jazz severely need a go-to score that isn't Gordon Hayward, and it's not that Hayward's not good.
It's just after a while.
He's not a number one option. For better or for worse, he's not. He's a wonderful player. He's a great scorer. He's a really good facilitator. Mm-hmm. He's not a number one option. They're definitely a defensive team, but not the best.
I think the Jazz are one of the best defensive teams in the league. You can maybe argue a strong case for second now that Gobert is healthy and they're back rolling along, but I'm not going to just dismiss what the Spurs have done all season long and how they've been able to lock in.
Hot take number three.
I thought you guys would like this one.
Oh, no.
Brian Frank Underwood Colangelo.
Oh, well, no, Brian's not the Frank Underwood. Jerry's the Frank Underwood. The Sixers on Liberty Ballers, shout out to Michael Bauman, by the way. He wrote an excellent article.
I think this is what I was going
to Yeah, the final Sixers recap, or their final home game, he replaced every verb with take over the team via Skype, hire their son, and run away to Arizona.
I mean, Arizona's a really nice place.
No, I'm not hating
on Arizona at all. Jerry, my great uncle and my great aunt, every winter and fall, when they live in Massachusetts, they live in Cape Cod, and when the cold weather comes along, they go to Arizona. I think Arizona would, I've never been there personally, but I'm sure Arizona's great. Not hating on that at all.
It's a really beautiful state. Flagstaff, the White Mountains.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, I guess the point is, did Jerry Colangelo pull a Frank Underwood? Absolutely did. He took over the team and he got everything he wanted. Hinkie's gone. His son's in charge. The owners caved to it. It's Machiavellian how he took over this team. That part of it's a work of art. My question is now is, are Colangelo and Josh Harris, like, I don't know whether these guys are just flat out liars or just totally incompetent or some combination of, you know, that was one of the headlines on Liberty Ballers mm-hmm. today, was that are they liars or incompetent? And it's a very valid question at this point, because they're selling a whole lot of different things around this team, you know, with how many Josh Harris says they interviewed all these GM candidates, and they're telling other reporters that Brian was their guy all along and they've been hiring. Like, it's a mess. I'm not going to go back onto this rant again. And, you know, I think Brian Colangelo, for what it's worth, at the introductory press conference, didn't say the worst things in the world. I think that he's going to try to do a bang-up job. And honestly, in the sense that I feel bad that it for how much nepotism he's getting, if they truly believed that he was the guy, they should have just held a real GM search. And then if you had held the real GM search, people wouldn't be upset. People would maybe think it's a bad hire and that you made the wrong decision, but people wouldn't be upset that you just totally didn't do your homework and that you just hired this dude's son. He's an absolute coward. He took over this team and then ran away to Arizona as soon as you hire your son.
Tim, you knew what you were doing when you brought up that hot take.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
I'm still a little salty about it, if you can't tell.
Well, one of the big stories that's coming up now is Damari Carroll is back for the Raptors. Before getting hurt, he was averaging 11.7 points and about 5 rebounds in 23 games. He's in the first season of his 4-year, $60 million contract. He played a little bit against the Hawks, scoring 5 points in 14 minutes. But the kind of cool, exciting part that I saw is he had 4 steals.
Yeah, I mean, he's their LeBron garter. Mm-hmm. So assuming they make it to the Eastern Conference Finals.
Is that expectations now? Pretty
it
much for them
be.
To
I
make
think,
it to the
I
finals.
I think if you're the Raptors, you could argue. I think expectations for the Raptors at the minimum should be ECF, and I think you could very well have the expectations to make the finals. I'm not saying they're going to, mm-hmm. but I think you should. I think anything less than the Eastern Conference Finals for this Raptors team is a failure.
You know, yeah. Vegas doesn't really believe in the Raptors very much.
And I don't think they ever do.
They don't have the Cavs only have, according to Vegas, a 14% chance of winning a title. And the Raptors' chance of making it to the Eastern Conference Finals is actually really low, according to Vegas.
To the ECF? Really?
Yeah.
Was I wrong? Am I wrong, or can the Raptors still take the number one seed?
They can. They need to win both, and the Cavs need to lose both, so there's a possibility. Granted, it's slim. I don't see that happening. But just the fact that they're in the mix still is a lot better than people would have even dreamed of giving them credit for at the beginning of the season. And Damari Carroll, I mean, like Tim said, when he was on the Hawks, what did we build Damari Carroll as last year? As the LeBron stopper. Mm-hmm. You need that guy that no one is ever going to truly stop LeBron. But if you can slow him and make the rest of the Cavaliers beat you, you at least have to be pretty satisfied with that game plan. And I think, obviously, it's going to be slow. You know, Damari Carroll only played a few minutes to start. He's missed the entire season. You know, if you can get him in any kind of reasonable form, it makes an already dangerous team that's the number two seed in the Eastern Conference right now that much more dangerous.
Well, it makes their small ball lineups a lot better.
Right, and on the side of the Cavs, I actually read a really good article by Dave Zavik of the Fear the Sword, and he was talking about how he thinks they should play Fry instead of Mozgov and instead of Tristan Thompson, like still have Thompson come off the bench, because he's saying that between Fry and Love, they've only played with each other on the court at the same time for 24 minutes and however many games he's been there now. And he was saying that when they did that, it was pretty good. And they're saying when Mozgov's the center, they do terrible. When Tristan Thompson's the center, they do really good. And he's saying, but Tristan Thompson has been really found his niche coming in on the second units and really working those bench players. So they're saying, keep him there where he can work that masterpiece, put Fry in. He's like, yes, Fry's going to have a slower step, but is it really going to be slower than Mozgov? Like, is it going to be much different than Mozgov's?
I think Tristan Thompson coming off the bench is absolutely what they need to do. Mm-hmm. I think that's completely on point. I think he's really done a good job of bringing a spark to that second unit. I think he's put in a lot of quality, almost underrated minutes for the Cavs this year coming off the bench. I think that Channing Frye has absolutely had a lot of success since he's come over and joined.
Oh, yeah, they were saying his fit is like almost
it's
perfect.
It's great. It's exactly what it's what I think the Cavs would have tried to do if they had signed Joe Johnson, let's say. Mm-hmm. I think Channing Frye is a really big asset in terms of their small ball lineup. I think we all know LeBron needs guys who can make open shots. I think Channing Frye can make open shots. I think they could do a lot more in terms of, like I said, I think they can do a lot more in terms of small ball with Channing Frye. I think Mozgov, while he played a lot of good minutes, and I think if you want to slow it down and be a more defensive-oriented team, I think there's a lot of logic to putting Mozgov in the game. But I think if you're trying to run and you're trying to gun the way the Cavs seem to be as of late, I think there's a lot of merit in keeping Frye in the game more.
Mm-hmm. Well, pace and space, man. I mean, like, every lineup is better with Frye. I was listening to the Low Post, and Zach Lowe was talking about sixth man of the year, and he was making a really interesting argument for Patrick Patterson, and basically what he was saying was sixth man of the year seems to go to whichever guy off the bench just takes a lot of shots. Mm-hmm. And that's essentially who gets it every single year.
CJ McCollum.
Right. Or J.R. Smith, mm-hmm, is a good candidate, although he's starting this
maybe
year.
Will
or
Barton
Jamal,
too,
Jamal, kind of? Will Barton, Jamal Crawford. Yeah. Those are always the guys that get, yeah, whoever comes off the bench and takes 15 shots wins it. And if you look at Patrick Patterson, although his numbers aren't particularly gaudy, every single Raptors lineup that's good has him in it. Mm-hmm. If you break down all the
and
different
I guess
lineups,
maybe that would be, you know, similar for Cantor's argument, because yes, Cantor's taking up the shots, but his
I think, well, with Cantor too, though, is I all the OKC's lineups aren't better with Cantor.
What about Tristan Thompson? Because they're visibly better.
I don't know. I'm not standing or I'm not sitting in front of the Cavs roster of different lineups they're running with Tristan Thompson. But I thought it was an interesting argument for sixth man of the year was, mm-hmm, the Patrick Patterson debate.
Oh no, I totally forgot to bring this up to you guys. I wanted to ask you, would you buy these? They're going to be selling these during the Lakers final game for Kobe. I just want
to. Those tickets, by the way, are averaging $1,800.
Some dude just paid for courtside. He paid $25,000 a ticket.
Oh, well, here's my question.
Oh, if I had the money, if I had that casual capital to burn, I'd fly out in a second.
Okay, how much would you pay to sit courtside at this stupid Warriors game?
A lot.
The same amount?
Would you pay more to be at the Warriors game or at Kobe's game?
Probably the Warriors game, honestly.
I think I would too, yeah, just for entertainment. I would, really? In general,
Warriors,
yeah.
You would pay $25 if you had the money. You would fork over
to
that
say
guy?
I went to the game that broke the Bulls record
over Kobe's. Last
I mean,
game.
Let's be honest. The Jazz might just destroy the Lakers.
Well, and we're splitting hairs here too. Is the thing is, like, when I say I don't want to go to Kobe's game or I want to flip Kobe's to ESPN, I mean, this is a 51% to 49% debate in my head. Like, I'm genuinely going back and forth, but in person might be a little, oh boy, I don't know. This is tough. This is probably the hardest question I've been asked in about a week.
Well, here.
I'm going Warriors, though. I'm sticking to my guns earlier. And even in person, I'd go to the Warriors game first. And to Justin's point, I do think the Jazz, especially if it means clinching a playoff berth, are just going to blow the Lakers out of the water. And I get a feeling that it's going to be a lot of Kobe just chucking shots.
Well, and okay, so back to the original question. Would you buy these? A 24 collection snakeskin hat that says 24 on the front of it.
Oh, I've seen this.
For $38,248.08.
The 24 is made out of gold.
Yeah.
Like, there's a reason it's this much, but there is 0% chance. I could be a multi-billionaire and have Mark Cuban's money, and I would not spend $50,000 or $30,000. What was it?
38, almost 40.
That's more than my car, man.
Well, here's if you don't want to spend that much, you can go a little cheaper. You can purchase a fitted hat with 5 yellow diamonds to represent Bryant's 5 NBA titles. Only 8 of these have ever been made, and you can buy this for $24,008.
See, for that, at least there's the, okay, only 8 have ever been made.
It's a hat.
But only in the collector's appeal, only because there's 8, I still wouldn't pay for that in a billion years. But at least with that, it's like, well, there's only 8 of them. Like, at least it would maybe have value.
You'd probably sell it on eBay for
more.
Well,
if it was me, I would just go get a Lakers hat. I'd put my own little shimmies on there, and only one of those was made. What's the collector's value there?
Well,
huh?
Here we go.
It doesn't have diamonds in it. Diamonds don't depreciate in value.
I would put little diamonds, and it would be the only one ever made.
Okay. Well, if you guys don't want to spend that much, what if you got this?
I think you underestimate how much a little diamond would cost. It might be worth buying the hat. hat at that point.
I mean, maybe. If the diamonds themselves are worth more than the hat, fine.
You could buy a stoned lambskin jacket decorated with crystals, and that is selling for $5,824.
See, the jacket is kind of cool. Like, I've seen the...
The jacket looks pretty cool.
Again, I'm not paying $5,000.
It reminds me of, like, someone that would wear Ed Hardy or something. You know, it's just not okay. That's what I envision. And maybe you're just reading this, so I'm not seeing it, but I envision...
You should, like, look up the picture.
Ed Hardy, really douchey.
Oh, it looks leathery. It looks leathery, jacket. Yeah.
Like, there's... Like, the art is cool. It's not like... Put it this way. Like, it's not an Ed Hardy shirt. It's not an Affliction shirt. And, again, no offense to anybody that wears this.
No. A total offense to all those people. You wear Ed Hardy, you're a douche.
No.
The great thing about Ed Hardy is the minute I see someone walking through the door wearing Ed Hardy, I already know everything I need to know about him.
I would like to point out the views of Tim Tompkins do not reflect
the
views.
There we go. No. All right, Justin.
I'm not going to hide my opinion. I'm not going to mince my words. You buy Ed Hardy, you are a douche.
Ed Hardy died this year, man. Be more sensitive.
He's probably a great guy. I'm talking about the people that wear his clothing line.
Okay.
I guess the point of all of this, though, is... It's irrelevant for all of us anyway, because Lord knows we are nowhere near in the tax bracket to be spending $24,000.
Well, and
hey, I could afford Ed Hardy. I choose not.
Well, Ed, we're not talking about Ed Hardy. The lambskin leather.
No, but
I can afford Ed Hardy too.
Tell me one person you've ever seen wearing Ed Hardy and you've had a conversation with them and they've been a good person.
I just don't really associate with people wearing
No, that's exactly my point. Okay, there we go.
I don't know anyone that wears Ed Hardy. What do you want me to do?
Right, exactly.
Oh, jeez. Okay, but I would like to point out these questions will be posted to our Instagram page at one point. If you would like to join in the conversation, just go follow us there. Drive and Dish Podcast.
You've got mail.
Gather around, everyone.
Oh, boy.
All right, so just for disclaimer, everyone that has sent a mailbag question this week, because we got a ton of them. You guys were great. We are going to answer probably about half of them now. And if we don't get to your question in this episode, we are going to be putting a second episode out this week. So stay tuned. We will answer your questions. First question comes from Stuart O'Kell. He asks, which team is going to overpay for Harrison Barnes in the offseason? I think they'll regret it.
Oh, man.
I actually asked Keith this question.
What did Keith say?
He said he didn't give me a team, but he said that they were going to do it over his potential more than what he's
proven. Yeah, I mean, anybody coming off a rookie scale deal, that's exactly what every single one of those contracts are here. You're paying for the potential.
Oh, and actually...
Gordon Hayward contract, you're paying for the potential.
Right. Speaking of, if you go and follow Keith on Twitter, he's been tweeting out these past week of players that have played enough minutes that put them in the starter category, which means they'll get a starter pay, which means they'll get more. Monte Unis somehow qualified for that. And Fournier was on the list. There was someone on there that actually surprised me. He's got it up on his Twitter. So.
Yeah, Keith Smith. I think it's Keith.
Smith, NBA.
No, Keith, yeah, Smith, Keith Smith, NBA.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to Keith.
I would not be surprised at all if my sons took a serious look at Harrison Barnes.
You think?
Yeah, I really hope they don't.
Oh, dude, is it bad that I immediately said Brian Colangelo is going to overpay Harrison Barnes and give him a max deal, and I'm just going to start hating everything?
It's possible. Like, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, the thing about that's different with the Sixers, though, is that you guys are so stacked at, like, your forwards and
yeah,
center spots.
We need the smaller guys. We don't need a forward.
that you need the smaller, like, shooting guard small forwards over your power forwards and your center. So, like... I'm not sure it would be a terrible move for the Sixers, and you got to pay somebody and the cap's going up, so you know maybe it's not the worst idea in the world. Kevin and I were talking about this before you got here, Justin.
Uh-huh.
I'm not a Harrison Barnes guy. Like, I don't think he's a
very
good player.
He's just not flashy, I guess.
I just don't think he's a max player is my point. Like, I don't think he's worth a max contract. Now, granted, like, he's definitely going to get one. Somebody is highly going to overpay for him, especially with the cap going up. Because let me tell you, when every GM has money, the theme of this offseason is going to be stupidity reigns, and I can't wait for it. But as of which team in particular, I mean, we got to give an answer other than the Suns and the Sixers. That's such a chalky answer for this pod.
It's going to be a team with money, a team that needs to invest in potential, you know.
Like, could you see a team like maybe the Trailblazers going after him?
I mean, the Trailblazers, you know, they already got there.
I think they kind of like weirdly enough, I think they like most of the players they have.
They're all rejects on other teams.
Yeah, they're like the misfits. I kind of think they... kind of want to roll with what they got and maybe build off it.
Did you see maybe the Pistons going after him? Did you say Pistons? I was going to say maybe like they want to get
some
somebody.
Bench. They need some bench scoring, yeah. But I think if you're going to pay him that much money.
Well, and get somebody a little, or maybe put him in the starting lineup and move Marcus Morris to the bench.
Marcus Morris has been good for him.
Oh, he has been. That's what I'm saying. But it's just kind of that extra
punch. Do you really want Caldwell Pope and Harrison Barnes?
No.
Right?
No. I was going to say Magic, but I don't
you know. You know who might? The Mavericks. They seem like a team that would go out and give them some money.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, because they have Parsons, but you worry about Parsons.
This is last year of Parsons' contract, isn't
it? Yeah, and you worry about Parsons' injuries. You know, we know it's been kind of up and down. So, yeah, I don't know. Regardless, one thing we can definitively say is that Harrison Barnes will be playing on an NBA team next season.
Yeah, he will. And I want to know who gets more money, Harrison Barnes or Kent Bazemore. I really want to know how much money Kent Bazemore gets this offseason.
I'm willing to bet it's going to be Barnes.
Yeah, I mean, probably.
I do, too. I think Barnes will get more just because he's a Warrior. I think they'll have that, like, that 73-9 luster.
Yeah. He won't be on the Warriors, though. We know that much.
That is very true. Mm-hmm. So the next question comes from Cupboard Horsington, which is a fantastic name, by the way. Cupboard Horsington. That's great. But speaking of the Warriors, it kind of fits. Cupboard says, people keep telling me Steph is having the best season of all time from three-point land. While he's made a lot, he's taken a lot too. But how can he be the best of all time if he isn't even the best this season? Redick is 2% ahead of him, and it's not like he gets left wide open. Part of being a good shooter is taking good shots. I guess my question is, Steph takes a lot of simply terrible shots, but he makes them at a clip that is okay. Does that make him the best shooter this season?
Here's my theory on that. How are they terrible shots if you're making them? They're not. They're shots that you're making.
Well, that's
I understand that Redick has a 2% shot better than him, but I don't think any shot that Curry takes, anybody's going to be super happy with.
Well, this is off the dribble shooting that's impressive.
Yeah.
Well, and earlier this year, we broke down Redick versus Curry because this kind of came up, and Redick is Curry's taken significantly more, so the fact that he's only it's a lot more, it's like, you know, 250 more.
I feel like he's averaging 11 3-point shot attempts
a game. The fact that he's only 2% behind it is pretty impressive in itself. And to Justin's point again, I think if a lot of people other than Steph Curry were taking all of Steph Curry's shots, they would be considered bad shots. And I don't think players should just, you know, we talked about people chucking earlier, and I don't think people should just start chucking because everybody's not Steph Curry. But the question becomes, when you're shooting at the percentage that Steph is from some of these shots, especially off the dribble like Tim mentioned, I just don't really know that qualifies as a bad shot. I think if it was someone other than Steph Curry, you could make that argument, but I think because Steph's made them at such an impressive clip that I can't give them the bad shot argument. He's kind of getting lucky. It's not unsustainable. Like, I think Steph Curry has proven in the past 2 to 3, 4 years that it's pretty damn sustainable what he does.
He's also almost at 400 3-point shots.
And that's not
made
to knock away from J.J. Redick is having a fantastic season. I mean, he's been probably the low-key hero for the Clippers this year. But it's Steph is having the best shooting season of all time.
They're different shooters, whereas Redick is really, really good at getting himself open and getting into the spot of the floor where he needs to be shooting from. And that's where his value comes in. Whereas Curry is just good at dribbling and just throwing up a shot and going in.
Also, with what I've noticed with Curry, when he takes the 3-point shot, he goes up and down. With J.J. Redick, he jumps forward.
Yeah.
And a lot of people were saying that's why Redick won't ever win or wouldn't be able to beat Curry and Klay in a 3-point contest, because his shot takes longer to start up and go. So the time aspect of a 3-point contest kind of messes with Redick's game.
Yeah, I just don't think that Redick would be making the same shots that Curry's putting up. And I mean, what was the stat earlier? Was that Curry hasn't had a shot blocked from 3-point from 3-point range, and it was like 700 days or something.
Yeah, it was Gobert finally had one. Yeah, Gobert finally got him. But yeah, just that's such a ridiculous. And that's a ridiculous stat right there.
With how many he's putting up and how well he's being guarded, and no one can block a shot.
Yeah, that release, man, it's something else. All right, so the next question comes from Espen Veda Skjanes, and I probably butchered this. He's checking in from Norway, by the way, so shout out to Norway. We haven't had too many Norwegians check in, so that's pretty cool. But he asks, what is Giannis' ceiling, and is he the best prospect in the league not named Karl Anthony Towns?
It's kind of hard to say what his ceiling is because they're moving him to point guard, so it kind of makes it a little funky because we haven't really seen this too much, but the numbers show it's pretty
high. His ceiling's probably, you know, multi-year all-star. I mean, I don't think he's ever going to be the best player in the league. He might win MVP. Well, can Giannis ever be the best player on a championship team? Probably not. You know, okay. I don't really ever
you don't
see
think
that
he could lead them? Like,
no, I don't. I just don't think he could ever be the best player on championship team. I think that you have to surround him with too much shooting. I think he's great, but in my opinion,
that 3-point shot.
Yeah, exactly. In my opinion, I think his ceiling's probably multi-year all-star, but that's not bad.
No, there's nothing wrong. His ceiling to me, if he ever develops a jumper, and it's a little different because he's playing point now, but if he ever develops a jumper, his ceiling to me is Kevin Durant. I mean, he's got the same type of build. He's got the same. I mean, he's a better athlete.
He's
than
never going
to
have that touch, right? That Kevin Durant does,
and that's why I don't think he'll necessarily hit that ceiling. But I think Giannis can be a multi-year all-star. Is he the best prospect in the league not named Towns? I mean, it depends, I guess, what's the cutoff for prospect? Is Anthony Davis still considered a prospect? Because he's not better than Anthony Davis.
What about Porzingis?
I think he's a better prospect than Porzingis. Actually, well, ask me that another day. I have to go back.
You
got to
see a few more years at Porzingis. I mean, Porzingis really slowed down the end of the season. A lot of people weren't talking about it.
With a lot of those guys. I mean,
they get tired.
With this past draft, I mean, you know, with guys like Okafor, with guys like, you know, even Devin Booker, I'll throw you a bone a little bit there, Tim, because I know how much you love Devin Booker. And I think he's great.
That's fine. Devin Booker didn't slow down. But a lot of these rookies did slow down.
Absolutely.
They aren't used to playing that many games. How much can you judge after 1 year? Also, when you look at some of these rookies, like Porzingis is playing around better players. He has better players around him than Okafor. Mm-hmm. So how do you judge them on the same level?
Well, and put it this way too. If I look back at that draft in 2013, I probably take Giannis 1. And I'm not going to judge 14, 15 yet. I probably take him 1. It's either him or Gobert, put it that way. It's him. If I redraft that year, I probably go. My top three in no order are Giannis, Gobert, and Nerlens. And then Oladipo's probably my first out.
Yeah, I'd take Oladipo over Nerlens.
Would you?
Yeah, I think.
You got to take into account Nerlens took a whole year to come back. Too, you know, like Oladipo gave immediate impact.
Sure,
I just think Oladipo is going to be a better all around player. I think Nerlens is. I'm not sure Nerlens is ever going to be good enough offensively to make me want to take.
Well, my question
Oladipo
is, do you think Oladipo becomes that great with the Magic, or do they end up trading him? Because I know there's been kind of rumors, but
yeah,
not really.
I mean, they need to get a new coach, man. I'm sorry, but you don't take Oladipo's great. You don't move him to the bench.
But the team do better once he moved to the bench?
Yeah, I don't care. You learn how to make him a starter. You move Alfred Payton to the bench then, but you don't move Oladipo. Like I think Oladipo's a future
Alfred Payton
star.
Had a pretty good year this year so
he
far.
He did. He did.
I mean, there's only two left.
Oladipo's better. They play different positions, so maybe you shouldn't be comparing the two, or I shouldn't be comparing the two.
Well, the two positions they play are probably the closest in similarity, right?
Yeah, shooting guard. But it's like, could you ever compare Klay Thompson to Russell Westbrook? Like, they're both guards, but
they play
ones,
different games.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, everyone, again, for the mailbag questions this week. Really got a lot. Appreciate it. And Sam Roberts, Keith Nassie, Charlie Burns, we have all three of your questions. We're going to read them on next episode, so don't worry. You are not ignored. We will get to you. And as always, you can send your mailbag questions in by following us on Facebook at Drive and Dish NBA Podcast. You can also follow us on Twitter. Hit us up that way using the hashtag mailbag at Drive and Dish NBA. And if you really want to, you could leave one on our Instagram page. You can follow us at Drive and Dish Podcast.
And download the SeatGeek app. Put in the promo code DISH, even if you don't buy anything. Whenever you do purchase those concert tickets or NBA tickets, it really helps support the show. You get $20 back. So go ahead, download the SeatGeek app. Put in the promo code DISH. Let us know you did it, and we will give you a shout-out on the show.
Yes, and they won't screw you over like StubHub did, that one guy who now will never be able to see a game at the Sleep Train Arena.
I really hope they change the name.
Sleep Train Arena?
Yes.
It just does kind of have
I think it's the worst name in the NBA for an arena.
They didn't really have a good record in that arena.
No, they just changed the name. I realize it's a sponsored name, but
come on.
Yeah. So, the Kings are going to have an incredible arena.
We got to take a trip out there.
Well, virtual reality, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, like, it's almost like I wish they put as much energy into building this incredible arena as they did into building a basketball team, and then poor Kings fans would finally get a break.
Hey, they got Rondo.
They got 2 years.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah, 2 years. Yeah.
But if you want to follow us individually on Twitter, follow me at Justin C. on the air, follow Kevin at Refuse to Lose, and follow Tim at Radio Tim NBA.
Yeah, and as always, we're on iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, TuneIn. Shout out to the good folks at Blog Talk Radio. They host our show. You can check us out on Blog Talk. We are accessible.
I think we've done enough dancing for today. So why don't we dance Wednesday?
See you, Starside.
Okay, well, I'm out.
Get off!
Hey!
Hey! Let's go while we're young!
All right, I think they get the point.